Kimiko, a teacher at the sewing academy, seemed out of place. She was so plump, she sometimes wanted to burst out laughing at herself. Yet Kimiko didn't feel any sorrow about this nickname. "A Daruma faces the wall for 9 years," she'd say. In 3 years, her younger sister Michiko would graduate from a Tokyo women's college. They had lost their parents early, with no other relatives to turn to. The elder sister Kimiko was born with rather plain looks. When Michiko graduated from girls' high school, she told Kimiko, Michiko's tuition was a considerable amount. After teaching morning, afternoon, and evening classes, she returned. Even on her 3 days off a month, she wouldn't see a movie. On mornings after an all-nighter, she would be the first to arrive at work. Resigned to her humble attire, she waited for her sister's graduation day. "There's no Daruma-san as thin as this," she mused. Kimiko laughed alone, looking in the mirror. Michiko finally graduated from women's college. "Sister, I'm home. I wanted to see you so much." In 3 years, Michiko had completely adopted the Tokyo dialect. Kimiko's heart warmed with joy. "Oh, sister, your hand is so hot. You seem to have a fever." As she spoke, Michiko looked closely at her sister's face, surprised. "No, it's nothing at all," Kimiko replied. Kimiko said this with a lonely smile. Still in her uniform, Michiko broke ice and wrung out towels. In the morning, a doctor arrived. After the doctor left, Michiko went to get medicine. They gave her powders and a liquid medicine, but her sister's fever did not subside. Cherry blossoms bloomed in the courtyard, then scattered. When the rainy season ended, the summer festival of Ikukunitama Shrine would begin. The war widows Kimiko had taught came to visit her. Michiko saw them off at the entrance. Michiko softly inclined her ear toward the window, but the sounds of lion dance practice from Ikukunitama Shrine couldn't possibly be heard. Noticing the western sun on the window, Michiko stood and drew the curtains. Then, as she turned, Kimiko softly uttered, "Ah." It was the morning of the third day after her sister's funeral. For 4 or 5 days, old newspapers lay untouched, piling up. Michiko saw them as a quiet symbol of her own sorrow. As she gazed without truly seeing, her eyes suddenly lit up. A recruitment ad for Japanese language instructors in the South caught her eye. "They're looking for people to teach Japanese in the South," she murmured, reading on. When she reached the part about applicants of either gender, vocational school graduates, or equivalent, Michiko's eyes shone brightly once more. She devoured the words, reading that section over and over again. "Applicants of either gender, vocational school." Michiko's gaze drifted up to the framed diploma on the wall. It was the diploma that had taken her sister's youth, her very life, a sight that always pierced Michiko's heart. But now, a sudden thought, "Ah, that can be useful," cleared her mind. "My sister exchanged her life for that diploma, and now I can put it to use for our country. Yes, I'll go to the South to teach Japanese." As Michiko whispered these words, she felt a pull to leave the mainland, haunted by her sister's sad memory, drawn deeply by the invitation to travel to a distant southern land. Until age 27, she never married, nor knew the joys of a young woman. Like a Daruma doll, her sister faced lonely, pure struggles, ending her young life too soon. Recalling her sister's solitary life, Michiko knew she couldn't settle for ordinary youthful happiness. For Michiko, ready to brave the lonely winter winds that swept through her sister's life like a blizzard, there seemed no way to honor her sister but to abandon her own youth, work, and die in a foreign land. "I'm sure my sister would be happy too." To teach Japanese in the South, one must speak standard Japanese. But Michiko had lived in Tokyo for 3 years, so that part would be fine. She recalled her sister's kindness, sending her to a Tokyo school, as if it were yesterday. Soon after submitting her application, a selection exam was held. During the oral interview, asked about her motives and family situation, "It was just the two of us sisters," she began. Then, unexpectedly, tears fell. "Oh, I'm so flustered. They'll surely reject me," she worried. Yet, over a month later, in the Osaka edition of a morning newspaper, a list of successful candidates appeared. Among them, subtly, was the name Tamura Machiko. Machiko's actual surname was Tanaka. She first thought Tamura Machiko must be a newspaper typo. But then, what if another woman from Osaka, with a similar name, Tamura Machiko, had also applied? Thinking it might be a grave mistake, she anxiously awaited the official notice. The acceptance letter arrived by post 3 mornings later. However, along with that notification, a letter addressed to Tanaka Kimiko, her deceased sister, was unexpectedly delivered. In the apartment courtyard, the scent of osmanthus already filled the air. A letter arriving unexpectedly for her dead sister felt utterly surreal. Her sister had died on a hot summer evening during the Ikukunitama Shrine Festival, a day Machiko could never forget. Had it already become the season of osmanthus? Her sister's death weighed heavily on her heart again, renewing her tears. Wiping her tears, she looked at the back of the envelope, where Sato Shosuke was written. It was an unexpected letter from a man. Machiko felt a stir in her chest. It had been over half a year since Machiko returned to her sister's home. Never had a letter from a man, either of sympathy or condolence, arrived for her sister. This sadly underlined her sister's lonely, pure life, making Machiko feel a pang of sorrow. Yet, 3 months after her sister's death, Machiko felt less curious and more lonely about who this Sato Shosuke could be, who had sent the letter. Please forgive my long silence. I finally made it to the point of graduating from university next year. Before that, I volunteered for the Student Naval Air Corps and will soon leave my academic life. For me, a longtime struggling student, graduation was a shore I longed to reach. But the joy of taking flight as a student naval airman now surpasses even that of graduation. I will probably not return alive. Therefore, I don't believe I'll ever see you again. The book I lent you once, Ogai's The Improviser, please keep it as a memento of me. I'm sure you must be angry that I haven't shared my address or written for so long. This letter serves as my apology. Even now, I haven't forgotten your kindness, mending the torn clothes of a struggling student like me. Please take good care of yourself. From that letter alone, Michiko couldn't tell what kind of relationship her sister Kimiko had with the university student. But after reading it, when she searched her sister's desk drawer, Mori Ogai's pocket edition of The Improvisatore indeed appeared. The moment she murmured, "Why didn't my sister return this book?" Machiko suddenly realized, "Ah, that's right. Perhaps the young man, a high school student in Osaka back then, stopped sending letters and never revealed his whereabouts after graduating and moving to a university in Tokyo. That's why Kimiko couldn't return the book, even if she wanted to." Machiko imagined their relationship was probably a fleeting one. Her sister, 3 or 4 years older, felt sympathy for the student's struggles, mending his torn clothes and patching his socks. Once they parted ways, it was over. Perhaps it was a casual connection where there was no obligation to keep in touch. But what my sister truly waited for, Michiko murmured, was still a letter from him. Michiko whispered this, feeling as if a warm breeze had gently brushed her. Sensing her sister's secret youth hidden within the improvisator, carefully tucked away in the desk drawer. But for a letter she waited for to arrive only after her death. Such a cruel twist of fate. Thinking this, Michiko once again felt pity for her sister. The loneliness of her sister's youth sadly manifested even in this. As tears quietly fell, Michiko picked up her pen and began to write a reply. This is her younger sister. My sister, Kimiko, departed on July 8th of this year for a journey from which she will never return. Thank you for lending her the book for such a long time. After writing that far, Michiko could no longer continue. But it wasn't simply sadness that made her stop writing. She felt it would be wrong to send such a sorrowful letter to someone about to bravely soar as a student pilot, a sea eagle. The reason he hadn't written to her sister before was likely just a carefree, student-like carelessness. And on this day, when he had decided not to return alive, Machiko considered the feeling that led him to remember her sister and send a letter. She resolved to keep her sister's death a secret at all costs. Machiko tore up the half-written letter, then wrote and sent a new, encouraging one in her sister's name. A week later, Machiko traveled to Tokyo. She was to receive training as a Japanese language instructor for deployment to the south. Leaving Osaka early in the morning, she arrived at Tokyo Station already in the twilight hours. As she prepared to board a streetcar, crossing the station square, with her sister's ashes in her bag, a group of students stood together singing their school song. Machiko paused, watching them. When the school song ended, three-beat clapping began. As Machiko smiled at the very student-like shouts of clap, clap, someone suddenly yelled, "Banzai to Masusuke Sato! Go bravely! Masusuke Sato, hang in there!" The moment she recognized the name, Michiko's heart skipped a beat. Ah, Mr. Sato, wasn't this the very person who had sent her sister a letter just a week ago? The situation was now crystal clear. This must be a group of fellow students, seeing off the one who volunteered to join the Air Corps as a student sea eagle. Machiko, filled with excitement, stood on tiptoes behind the crowd, trying to get a glimpse. In the center of the circle, standing alone with a shy expression and a stiff posture, that must be him. Impulsively, she wanted to rush over and declare, "I am her younger sister," but the thought, "No, I must not taint the sacred departure into the world of men," suddenly stopped her in her tracks. Machiko held herself back. Then she thought, "I'm going to the south anyway. Perhaps I'll unexpectedly meet him somewhere there. That will be the time to introduce myself. I am her younger sister, Kimiko Tanaka's younger sister." She whispered this silently, listening as the sounds of clapping faded into the twilight. It was a late autumn twilight, deepening into darkness with each passing moment. Soon, she secretly watched his broad shoulders disappear into the station gate. When she returned to the square, it was already completely dark, and night had softly fallen. "Sister, Machiko saw him off on your behalf." Machiko murmured this, shifted the bag containing her sister's ashes to her left hand, and gently wiped her eyes. Then, to hurry to the temple in Akasaka Aoyama-cho, designated as her training ground, she walked towards the streetcar stop.